Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Thank you so much for listening, joining, subscribing, liking, downloading, whatever the heck you guys do. The number one dog training podcast. And this is a doozy for you guys. This is going to be about something that we've talked about before, but this dog owner asked some really incredible questions on dogs fighting in the house. And as you guys know, I've developed this system, which I'm going to start actually naming. I don't know what the heck I'm going to name it, but I just think that because I use the same system over and over and over again, if I had a name for it, I think it would be more applicable around the dog training industry instead of people just trying to say like, you know, like what you're doing. Like, anyway, so this is exactly a lot of the same stuff that we already deal with, but the dog owner does ask a lot of really great questions, which I think is going to be really helpful for you guys. Unless I wouldn't put it out. Again, I've talked about that before. I've recorded a lot of podcasts and I don't put them all out because I'm like, nope, this is not going to be hugely beneficial. But this one is pretty good. So three Great Danes, two of them are siblings and they're fighting, right? And it's like, it's a lot because, you know, all the dogs are over 100 pounds. So it's a really good podcast on going over how to manage dogs that are fighting in the house, but also what is the realistic goal? And oftentimes, as you guys know, dog owners are looking at the symptoms of, hey, here's the problem. Here's the problem. No, that's the stressful thing for you as a dog owner. The real problem is let's pull back a little bit and see where your foundation is. Let's see what your communication looks like. Let's see what your basic obedience looks like. Does your dog respect you? Does your dog listen to you? And we actually switched over to FaceTime and we kind of went over that. So what you guys don't see, obviously, is her working with her dog, and I kind of commentate on it a little bit, but the reality is she gets her dog out, and she says, okay, let's do a down, let's do a sit, and the dog doesn't do anything. So again, we dog owners commonly, and dog trainers also deal with this every day, is dog owners will come in with this very in-depth behavioral problem, but they don't have any foundation. And I don't know if there's another name for this that other people have been saying, but I can tell you that my technique and my system, time and time again, within 48 hours, either completely modifies the dog's behavior from their symptoms, changes the symptomatic behaviors, the barking, the lunging, the growling, the stressful things, and they're gone. So not gone forever, but externally they're gone. It's not about suppression. It's not about anything other than understanding that you are the cause and the solution to your own problems. Your symptoms that you're seeing with your dogs, the barking, lunging, growling, fighting with each other, going after other people, etc., is in a direct correlation with your underlying foundation. If you want to stop your dog from doing all the symptomatic things, that you're pulling on the leash, growling, barking, etc., but you can't get your dog to down and stay with crickets in the room, that's the problem. Now, if you guys have been to my seminars and if you've worked with me in person or if you're in the members club and you've watched me in depth working with dog owners, because that's one thing that I have the amazing, fortunate opportunity in life to travel the world and do what I love with my friends and family and with the community that we've worked really hard to build. And so many times people say, man, I've watched every single video, I listened to every podcast, but seeing you in person connect all the dots is on another level. And I'm not saying that to toot my own horn. I'm just saying you guys out there are only seeing, when you're listening to this and you're watching my videos, you're seeing 10% of the process, which is good and bad. It's good because it still helps millions of people every single month, hundreds of millions of people since my career started, which is insane to think about, right? When we start looking at the numbers. But at the same time, it's also really important for people to understand the cons of these things. You know, people say all the time, like, equipment. Well, I'm like, first of all, these people all came in with equipment. Second of all, I don't put equipment on every dog. You guys are just seeing the problematic dogs that we're posting, because I don't post basic obedience stuff, because you can go get that down at PetSmart, right? I don't do the foundational stuff often, because I'm too busy doing what my passion is, which is problem solving, which typically then results in then a dog being too far gone that they need equipment to get back, right? Anyway, so with that being said, I'm very excited about my seminar in the Washington, Seattle area this month in June. All the information and tickets are in the description below. If you guys can make it, I hope to hang out with you over the weekend, and hopefully you guys can see what the reality of connecting the dots look like. You can see all the little tiny pieces, and you can see the real formation of like what happens. And we're actually documenting the process and putting out like a mini documentary of what I actually do, because it's much more than dog training. And I'm very excited about that. So hopefully we'll see you guys there. We're kind of filming this special thing, and I hope to see you guys there and get involved with that. Enjoy this podcast, you guys. I hope that you like it. And we're going to get into some questions on the podcast later on. I just want to get these guys out to you guys. So enjoy, and I'll talk to you next time.
So I have three Great Danes. One guy in particular has some problems with resource guarding and is super like anxious a lot of times. He will resource guard me and the couch, the dog beds, anything from the other two that we have. One of which is a his litter mate. They're from the same litter. Didn't realize that was bad until after. And then we also have a 3-year-old Great Dane. So, and then the other day a couple weeks ago, we had some roofers over, and any kind of noise or change like that tends to be more stressful for him. His name is Bogart. And my girlfriend kept like walking in the room, and he would be reactive towards her, like aggressive, like starting, being like startled and like almost going to like doing this kind of the same stuff that he would do to one of the dogs. And then at one point she went over to him, and then he just like lunged at her and bit her arm. That was the first time he's bit anybody. He has gotten into fights with his brother, his litter mate. And then the older guy, Lincoln, that we have, Lincoln will just cower away so that they don't get into it. But if he goes at Barrow on the wrong day, like they're getting into it, like Barrow will get some scrapes on him from his teeth, but no, like actual serious bites or tears.
Okay.
It looks awful.
Sure.
We end up...
So Lincoln is the older dog. How old is he?
He's 3.
Okay.
In July, he'll be 3.5.
So I'm sorry. The other two are what?
They just turned 2 on the 25th of May.
Okay. And what are their names?
Bogart is the guy we're talking about, and then Barrow is the his litter mate, and then Lincoln is my 3-year-old.
What was the first one you cut out there? Sorry.
Oh, sorry, Bogart.
Bogart, okay. So Bogart and Lincoln are okay. So
Bogart and Barrow are the litter mates.
Right, but Bogart and Lincoln are the ones that are having some issues.
Lincoln, he'll charge Lincoln, and he tends to have a harder time like with Lincoln doing stuff. Like if Lincoln tends to be more timid with him, like he won't get on the couch or sometimes cross the room because Bogart's in one of his moods. He tends to be worse at night than it is during the day. But if two dogs are going to get into it, it's going to be Bogart and Barrow. Lincoln will cower away.
Okay.
You know, nothing will happen.
Okay. So is it all for resources, or what is it typically? Is it just for resources like space, the couch, you,
food, toys? Like right. If he sees that somebody has something that he wants, like Barrow was digging in the couch one time, he got a piece off of a blanket because he likes to chew on stuff all the time, and he was going into the couch digging into it. And then because he was going after that, Bogart wanted that, and they got into a pretty bad spat that time.
Okay.
So most of the time it is over space and me, food, toys, the couch and dog beds, that kind of stuff. And then if he's barking at like, say, people coming in the house, he can be like, you know, get really snappy at the other dogs and then like telling them to back off. Like he wants to be the one like up front and center.
Okay. So what kind of training have you done with Bogart?
So I've done one of the trainer that I've worked with the most. She was training like the, what the seeing eye dogs are taught, like, you know, the command trainings that if they follow what they're commanded to do, whether that's a sit or a come or a stay or whatever, then, you know, good boy. If they don't do it, then it's a sharp no. And then if they still don't listen after that sharp no, they get a correction. Outside, this works phenomenal with the e-collars. Inside, Lane can do really well with the e-collar all the time. The puppies, though, the twins, they can't do it. They get more anxious inside if they get corrected inside with the e-collar.
Okay, so
they do listen fairly well to me with the commands for the most part. It's just when they're barking or doing something like they're overly excited, then they don't hear it.
Right. Okay. So you've done e-collar training with all of them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So with Bogart, he seems like he's the aggressor in most of these situations.
Yeah.
Okay. So with Bogart, let's say, like, give me an example of something happening. So you're in your house, Barrow just starts to dig into the couch like you said he did before, and then mm-hmm. Bogart comes
He'll
over.
Lunge at him.
Okay.
He'll lunge at him and just start mm-hmm. like if Lincoln comes over onto the couch and starts to say hi to somebody, he'll lunge at Lincoln. If there's like food around at all, he'll attack anybody else. If there's like, he thinks that anybody's going to get any of that.
Okay. All right. And are they fixed?
Bogart is the only one that's fixed. And I was trying to like limit the like aggression, you know, mm-hmm. But it didn't really seem to change anything for him at all. Okay. And he got fixed like a few weeks right before he was one. So like 1 or 2 weeks before he was 1 year old.
Okay. So, all right. So I would say the best course of action, obviously considering, you know, the time that we have and how big these dogs are, is there's a likelihood that the dogs themselves, like Bogart's just being pushy with his sibling for the most part. Lincoln tends to escape some of the issues and some of the tension and some of the potential aggression, I guess, with Bogart. So that's common.
He'll walk away, but it still is a focus. If he's like trying to get on the couch or something like that, he still will focus on him.
What do you mean?
Like, if Lincoln, he really sometimes, like, I don't have another way to say it, but like has a hard on for Lincoln. Like Lincoln, like, if Lincoln is trying to, even like, so in the bedroom, Bogart will sleep on a bed either next to me or on the floor next to my girlfriend, and Lincoln got off the bed, then that's a problem if Bogart is now on the bed. And then if Lincoln walks across the space and looks like he's going to get on either, you know, of the beds, then he'll lunge at him and bark at him and like go to start something, but Lincoln always cowers away. So he does the same stuff to Lincoln, and almost like Barrow can sometimes, like Barrow is like, I don't know, he will do it to Barrow as much, but he really can sometimes just go after Lincoln a lot more too.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like he's the aggressor regardless of who it's, you know, who it's towards.
Right.
So I would recommend with Bogart in particular, again, it doesn't seem like he seems like he's basically picking on everybody, and yeah, he's probably going to pick on his sibling more than anybody else. So there's a difference between, like, there's a separation, I should say, between obedience training and behavioral training. And right, if Bogart's personality and his baseline behavior is to not like other dogs getting into spaces that he wants to claim. And it's definitely a form of resource guarding. He's guarding a resource that he perceives as beneficial or valuable to him. And it could be as minor as couch space, as minor as space between you and anybody else that he likes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it goes without saying the low-hanging fruit would be toys, food, treats, things like that are obvious, but it's just going, it's going a step further to say, like, I'm basically policing everything. It's kind of like this very unhealthy, I'm going to control every aspect of the house and the other dogs are walking on eggshells, hopefully not pissing him off.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And that's, it's something that definitely happens, as you said, between siblings. There can be, just like with humans, right? Just dogs typically don't do well with each other as siblings because of that. Their nature towards each other, one of them tries to big brother the other dog constantly, and it becomes this very tension, kind of stressful anxiety state. When they're puppies, they typically will play like gangbusters and you're like, oh, this is great. You know, the dogs are tiring themselves out. And then once they start to mature mentally, then the dogs actually start having these like very sibling rivalry type things. And one of the dogs will say, or try to say, I'm the bigger and badder. It's just like with people. I mean, my brother used to do it with me, so on and so forth.
No, I get
you know,
it's funny is Bogart is the smallest one of all of them. Like he's maybe 115 pounds, 111, 115. And we're Barrow's closer to like 120 and Lincoln's like 135.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like very slight in nature. So it's funny that, but yes, he is trying to be the biggest dog around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, and a lot of times that just doesn't matter. I've seen Chihuahuas control a room of, you know, of Rottweilers. So it's more about their, but that's the point, right? That's like what he's unfortunately, for whatever reason, trying to do is he's like, I very, very seldomly say this like alpha thing because I think it's bullshit for the most part. But for most dog owners, they're like, oh, yeah, I understand that. But that's what he's trying to do is he's just like, I'm in charge. I make the rules. I am gatekeeping space. I'm gatekeeping everything else. And typically what you'll see is when resources present themselves, what the dog like Bogart could be trying to do, and I don't know if they try to do this or this is something that naturally happens throughout this process, something valuable comes into the space, the other dogs will turn their heads and walk away. Like they're like, it's yours, take it. It's kind of like trying to have a conversation with a really drunk, pissed off person. You're just kind of folding over as the sober person and being like, okay, yep, you're right. Yep. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Let's just get in the car and go home. Like that's kind of like what the other dogs will do is like once something comes into their space, sometimes the other dogs will just cower over and sit, you know, air quotes, submit. They're like, yep, it's yours. You can have it. So anyway, that's kind of like the general principles of what probably is happening is you just got like a big bully Bogart that's like everything is mine, and if you have a problem with it we're gonna have a tussle. As you were saying before, the good thing, I'll give you the silver lining here, is obviously with such large dogs there could be a lot of damage and vet bills and all of that stuff. But right now they're just having these little arguments. Like you said, it looks insane. It's violent. It's traumatizing. It's like they're killing each other. But the reality is they're just having these little arguments. So when you get the teeth and the growling and the everything flailing around, it's kind of like, hey, I'm not trying to kill you here, brother, but I'm going to bop you on your nose a couple times and let you know that I want you out of this space. So that's a good thing just to give you context, because a lot of times dog owners get into this unfortunate like mental deep dive of, you know, my dogs are trying to kill each other, but if that were the case they actually would be. So you'd be seeing less like growling and barking and snarling and more like grab, thrash, rip, tear.
Yeah, definitely not that. It looks awful and it's scary, but it definitely isn't. Definitely isn't that.
Yep. No, I know. That's what I was. I just wanted to give you context on that. That although it does seem, and it is, it definitely is bad and terrible and yeah. stressful. It, there is.
It could be a lot worse.
Yeah, it's a decision that the dogs are making to say, "Hey, I'm not going to actually try to hurt this other dog, nor do I want to because I could. I'm simply just going to, you know, have a little." It's like again, brother and sister pulling each other by the hair. So anyway. That's context. I just want to let you know. But the other thing is, you know, just to be beneficial of our time here, is I think it's important for you to really be focusing on Bogart. And so some things that you can start doing is, you know, this kind of goes without saying, but I'll get into the very easy low-hanging fruit basics, is just make sure that when you are looking at this situation, your objective and goal is to try to find the aggressor, like just like you would with humans. Like, okay, who is the person that's causing all the stress and the tension and the gatekeeping and all that stuff? And so I would start working with Bogart one-on-one with your obedience. And what the obedience is going to start to do is it's going to give you an opportunity to start really putting Bogart in a position of understanding that you ultimately, or anybody else in the household ultimately, is the one that's going to be making these decisions and not him. And I'll dive a little bit deeper into that. But Bogart right now basically doesn't care under any circumstance, it seems, that you guys are in the room and he doesn't have any problem with, you know, going after the other dogs consistently.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do is I would be pulling Bogart aside and start kind of taking him down like this mental peg a couple of notches just to say, hey, ma'am, you need to start paying attention and respecting our boundaries and really, really engaging with handlers. So that's what I would start to do is I would kind of scale back a little bit and start getting on your basics because like I said before, if Bogart doesn't like the other dogs in these spaces, basically you have to go over him and say, that's inappropriate, quit the crap. And the way that I'm envisioning this is you're in your room, Bogart's laying next to your bed. Let's say Lincoln wants to walk across the room to leave the room. And Bogart's like, I'm going to kick your ass or I want you out of here. It's kind of like my puppy chasing my cat. Like they just do it instinctually. And you should be working on a timely correction to say, hey, that's inappropriate. We're not going to do that anymore. Because right now what's likely happening is the dogs are doing these things without timely and or enforceable corrections or accountability, specifically Bogart. So I've had these conversations hundreds of times with dog owners, and it doesn't matter how loud you scream or you kick or you shout or you punch or you shove or you pull or you squeeze. None of that matters to them. You have to start setting them up in situations like you would with impulse control with basic obedience. For an example, putting Bogart down, throwing toys, food, balls, having other dogs around, distractions, etc., and working on, there's two things here. I want you to really focus. This is the biggest takeaway, I think, in my opinion, for what you're dealing with. The first one is obvious control, because obviously Bogart has this personality of being a bully. So it's not like, it doesn't matter I shouldn't say that. If a dog doesn't like other dogs, you don't particularly have too much to say in that changing, because just like with people who don't like food or smells or music or whatever, if they don't like it, they don't like it. So I think it's important for you to really start being realistic, not that you're not, but I think looking at it with a different lens to say, hey, you need to start listening and pay attention to me and not worry so much about what your brother's doing or what Lincoln's doing. So I always ask people, let's put it to a really simple equation. Okay. Bogart may be a bully. Boom. That doesn't change. That's stable. It never changes. That's the most consistent thing. Okay. Bogart's being a bully to his other sibling. That makes sense. That's not far-fetched. That's not confusing. That's not weird. That's pretty typical and common. Yeah. So, and then I would say, okay, I want you to put Bogart in a down and a stay, and I want you to do some distractions and see how he does. Now, if you don't have good control,
we build on that.
What's that?
We need to build on that.
Yeah, like exactly.
Yeah. One of the things that, I mean, I've always cared more about the coming when I ask you to, because we have like an electric fence, so I don't want to be stuck outside waiting for them. But so I need to work on that. And then it's hard to work on him because he gets anxious and he starts panting and then he starts like trembling, and it's annoying when you're trying to, you know, give him commands. It kind of falls apart a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand. But that's part of the problem, you know, or a big part of the problem. And I try to, you know, really highlight these things for dog owners to understand. Like, take that situation. Exactly. Like, we just work through it really, really quickly. It's like, all right, I want you to get Bogart out, put him in a down stay, and do some basic distractions to see how he does, right? And it's like, well, he'll fall apart, he'll get anxious, he won't listen, he'll get up, it's this whole thing. But again, like, from my standpoint, from building this foundation with you, because that's really what I do, is you say, hey, I want this big, beautiful structure, and I want it to last for 1,000 years, well past my life. I say, okay, let's start looking at the foundation. I'm like, this isn't going to last 2 weeks, right? So these are the things that I want you to really focus on. Is, let's say we can't change Bogart's behavior because his personality is to say, hey, I'm going to pick on my brother. That's never going to change. That's not a training thing that you would go through. That's not like that's more impulse control, not extinction of that. It's not like we can't really modify the way he perceives his brother. You don't really have too much to say about that, to be honest. Right. But what you do have to say is, like, how much to me, the way that I try to think about it for dog owners is like being polite, right? Like, oh, hi, nice to meet you, thank you, please. Like, just, you don't have those basic manners with him, and that is very step one, right? Hey, Tom, I got these dogs that are fighting. I'm like, okay, put your dog in a down stay with minimal distractions. You're like, nope, everything goes out the window. I'm like, okay. So if you can't stop your dog from going into a down stay for more than a minute and a half with a couple bouncy balls running around him, you have no shot and chance ever to get your dog to not want to go after and be a bully to your brother or to his brother, because that's more advanced. So those are the types of things I would start to be working on, is the general concept of understanding that this Bogart may not ever not care about his brother or even Lincoln, but what you need to start doing is stepping in and advocating for the other dogs and say, hey, this is inappropriate. Quit the crap. And then hopefully the goal would be Bogart's going to decrease his bulliness and his boldness to the other dogs, because you actually matter in this equation. So seems to me like most dog owners, especially for right now, is you're reacting to his bad behavior. You're not being proactive to potential bad behavior. So I would say, again, exactly. So think about it like that. Think about it like, oh, my dog won't come back when called. That's all I want, Tom. Okay. How's your recall? Never done it. Okay. Let's start there. That's the, from my standpoint anyway, because I've had so much experience in this, that's the way I look at it, is Bogart's picking on two of my other dogs. He's obviously a bully. He's got something to prove, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I say, okay, how's your control and obedience? And you say, well, he's a mess and it's not that great. So, okay, well, you can't even think about modifying or changing the way Bogart thinks unless you can get him to do the very basic principles of communications. And that's what obedience is. So here's your game plan, is getting back down to the basics to make sure that you can really handle him in situations, but also tonight, today, this afternoon, and you probably have already done something to this degree, but start giving him less freedom. So that may mean keeping them separate, keeping him on leash until you really can gain more control. Because you don't want to give a dog all this freedom when he's making a lot of mistakes, because ultimately it's going to come back down to you for essentially being irresponsible because he's telling you, I'm going to make bad decisions. Yeah, I'm going to make bad decisions, and those bad decisions are going to be, unfortunately, it's going to fall on the other dogs.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right.
So then,
like with the electric fence, that like normally I let him out by himself or with his Barrow's brother because they do play well when they're out in the yard as long as there's no other toys. So then they'll romp around and play. So I usually let them off leash. But you're suggesting for now to not let him off leash, keep him on a leash and keep him close in while we're reinforcing his training.
Yes and no. So let me explain. Here's what I'm really big fan of. There's very few things in my dog training experience that I would consider very binary. Like it's either you'll never do this or you'll never do that, whatever. But with behavior, oftentimes I want you to have a less stressed life with your dog. I want your dogs to be less stressed. I want them to be happier. That's my goal. So if you say, hey, Tom, I let these guys out back. As long as there's no toys, they get along. I've never had an issue. And it's really beneficial for them to get some of this energy out. Then I would say, yeah, let that happen. Start really, because you don't want to make things worse by frustrating them because now they're not playing and exerting this physical energy.
Right.
I would... Like some sort of... like a problem solver. That's what you should be doing is saying, okay... Where are the mistakes happening? Where are the, let's say, arguments happening? Where are the triggers forming? That's where you want to start saying, I'm not going to allow you to be in these situations because you obviously are making bad decisions. And that's it. That's all you would do is you would say, Bogart, every time we're in the living room, every time we're going outside, every time we're in the, whatever trigger it is, you're going to start putting Bogart on the leash. And start working on basic manners. Like, hey, man, if one of the other dogs wants to walk by and you go to growl or lunge or bark or be a jerk, you're going to be corrected for that. And having the leash on the dog outside of off-leash remote collar work is going to be the only way that you can really tell him at that very moment that that is inappropriate behavior. Not only sustainably, meaning we want it to make sense for the dog and we want to take the equipment off, but it's also the only thing right now that's going to actually hold him accountable. I find too many dog owners go down the path of either avoiding a situation or hanging on to the dog and telling them verbally no. And it's so sad to see how many dogs go down that road because it never gets better. So my point is having the leash on the dog and making sure that you have some sort of equipment that the dog cares about, which is very important, right? And then the moment he goes, hey, I'm going to go after Lincoln or my brother because they're walking past me, that's where you can correct the dog at that moment and say, hey, man, no, leave it. That's inappropriate.
So question,
yeah.
Because I agree with what you're saying fundamentally. With Bogart, I have tried putting him on a leash when he's in the living room, and he becomes way more alert and way more likely to be snappy.
Mm-hmm.
So there are times where he is a bully in the living room, and then there are times where he's a little bit calmer towards the nighttime. We just bring him upstairs. So I agree that we need to stop just removing him at all times.
Mm-hmm.
But the leash right now makes him like not settle if he's on the couch and makes him like lunge at everybody kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know exactly why that is, but I can give you some very common reasons why that happens is if you're not using the leash often, when you put the leash on, it'll make a dog anxious because typically people who don't train with their dog regularly will only put the leash on a dog when they're going somewhere or if they're about to go do something, maybe go for a walk, go to the vet, go to your friend's house, whatever the case is. The leash means exiting, right? Not training. When the leash should be put on a dog and the dog's like, all right, what are we doing, right? So I'm not disagreeing with you, and you're 100% right. That's probably happening. However, I would just say because of you probably don't, and I don't know, but maybe if you don't use the leash often, then the leash represents this very anxious, like, okay, what are we doing? Where are we going? This off-putting thing, because you've conditioned the dog. Every time you slap a leash on the dog, they go do something. Now you're in your living room, you put the leash on the dog and they're like, why are you sitting down? This is weird.
Right.
The other things that go into that is vulnerability. So absolutely, the dog could say, hey, now I'm vulnerable. Like I feel like I can't protect myself, but this is part of the problem, right? Let's say this, okay? I want you to zoom out a little bit and you say, this is what I want you to look at it, is you go, hey, I have three dogs, okay? We're all in our living room, we're all in the yard, we're all in the driveway, whatever. And you can't put a leash on one of your dogs without the dog having a meltdown. Like that is definitely a problem. So, and maybe meltdown might be a little too much, but let's say he gets anxious and he can't, I'm like, dude, the leash is, that's like saying.
He gets more reactive.
Yeah, right. But that's like,
yeah.
And that's like saying, like the way that I'm viewing that is like, my son or my daughter is having a really hard time public speaking. I'm like, okay. But you know, at the same time, they also can't have a conversation with somebody privately. I'm like, okay, why are we, that's the way I'm visioning this is like my Bogart is reactive, possessive, anxious, aggressive at times, but I can't even put a leash on my dog without him getting like that. So I'm like, whoa, you don't focus. And I hope this is making sense, but I wouldn't be focusing on, yeah, I really want to run that 50 miles. I'm like, dude, how about you focus on like the 2 miles, like let's do 2 miles first. Like, can you even do that? You know? So I just think that is like very telling for you, really relieving for you that, oh wait, I'm focusing on these, you know, big problems. But the reality is again, you can't put a leash on Bogart without him. Like you should put a leash on a dog and they lift their head up and go, what are we doing? And you basically with your body say nothing and they lay back down or whatever. So anyway, I would just say like that is something I would consider is if you can't put a leash on your dog without them really getting like, holy crap, what are we doing? That's probably part of the problem, you know?
We tend to use the gentle leader, like the face going mm-hmm. around the nose and clicking around the head mm-hmm. when we go anywhere because of their size.
Mm-hmm.
So would it, for training purposes, be better to use a different leash or a different setup?
So there's two things. The application of the equipment is a different conversation from the application of just putting the leash on. Meaning, if you're just laying around, like, I would just be practicing putting the leash on, like, your martingale or your flat collar that you have on in the house. And I would just start doing that. And you can still use that for very easy direction, very minor, small, sometimes meaningless corrections. But don't focus so much on the application of, like, well, because then it makes this whole big thing. Then the other dogs get wound up. I would just go sit in your living room or sit in a common area, put your leash on your dog and sit down and work on a down. Say, hey, man, stay here. They're going to go, no, I don't want to. Like, I want to get up. And like, no, like, you're making bad decisions. You haven't earned this. You know, that's like all the kids in the room do their homework and get good on their grades. And then the one kid bombs it, doesn't show up for class, and they get the same privileges. It's like, no, man, like, you need to, you're going to go into a down stay. You're going to stay at this position because you're not earning your freedom, you know? So,
yeah.
Anyway,
I get that part.
Yeah.
Are we going to ever go through, like, so, like, I have some basic trainings in how to do some of these things, but it might be helpful to have, like, I don't know, you've seen me do some of these things so you can correct what I need to be doing a little better or differently.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, we could do that if you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what we were talking about before. Is I think I would, your homework should be and your roadmap should be, like, right now you don't have the skill sets with him to get him to do very basic stuff, you know, in a controlled environment. Now, if we were to enter
on the leash and then off the leash, it's a little bit better, but I realize he has to be doing it on the leash.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would just say, like, again, I want you to really zoom out and look at that. I mean, it's a really easy situation. Like, I understand what you're saying about off leash, and some dogs perform better on leash and off leash, and that is definitely a thing. But at the same time, like, look at, again, I want you to look at foundational communication, right? So let's say, hey, I get one of the dogs in my office with not much going on, or, and, you know, really it doesn't get any more less distracting than this. And we say sit, and he's kind of pawn, and he's like, no, I'd rather, like, can we not do this? Like, I don't want to do this. We say down, pause, gets up, move. So these are the types of things that I would say, like, if you, again, I mean, this is what you're doing, but I just want you to look at it as a real life consulting process of you coming in to say, hey, here's my dog Bogart. He's, you know, great with us, but he's going after some of the other dogs. And I would say, okay, what type of communication do you have? What type of control do you have? What type of respect do you have when you say something? Like, does it matter? Right? Like, that's even a good question to ask yourself. Like, when I ask my dog to do something, like, how much does the dog understand it? How much does it matter, right? And in this very basic type of thing, and again, I understand, you know, you're not in, like, this training thing, but at the same time, it's like you're dealing with advanced problems with very, very minimal basic communication. So
yeah.
I would be going right back to the basics of making sure at a fundamental level we can at least get him to do a down and a stay and things like that. But I just think building your relationship, going back down to basics with threshold work, is going to be fundamentally a big, big part in his confidence, like making sure that he understands, like, when I tell you to do something, it's not an option. It's not a very kindly asked request, and if you decline, we're just going to ask you again. Like, I think you should just get tighter on that stuff, because you can tell how nervy he is. His tail's tucked all the way under himself. So I would just say, like, that's what you should be focusing on. And then the opposite, not the opposite, but the other end of that, I would say, is when you are in situations when you're working with him, I would be making sure when he's around the other dogs that you do have him on leash so you can start catching him for these things.
Okay. So then, like, are we allowed to, am I allowed to, like, start with treats and then phase them out? Or mm-hmm. he knows the commands, but because he's anxious, I was thinking it might be helpful to start that way and then to phase them out.
Yeah, absolutely. Any type of tool that you add to your training, obviously treats being one of those tools, the goal is to shape and mold. Okay, perfect example is I'm potty training my son right now. He gets a little M&M and he gets a sticker if he goes. Great. But he's not going to be 12 years old getting a sticker and an M&M when he goes, you know, go potty, right? Like it's right. just for us to shape and mold. Hey, man, this is what we do. This is how we do it. And then eventually all the equipment starts to go away. It doesn't mean that you can never use them again. It doesn't mean that you don't need to use them again. It just means okay. that in the beginning stages, that tool or those tools are helping develop and shape. So yes, use those external rewards like food to keep them motivated to really get back down to those basic stuff.
He still gets anxious even when food's involved. Mm-hmm. So I was told by a different trainer just to move his space. Like, so it's kind of like a reset, you know, by to like move him over a little bit and then to do it again. Like he kind of falls apart as soon as you start asking him to do stuff on leash, off leash. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, besides the cum, he does that fairly well. Like,
yeah,
for me anyway, he does it like, unless he has to go to the bathroom, he pretty much listens to me. Especially inside, outside, like 95% of the time. He will get a butthead sometimes when he knows he's going to be like separated from the other dogs if we have to leave or something. But then I have to trick him. But.
Yeah. Yeah, you just... And I think that, you know, again, like considering he's a large breed, like my dog's the same way. He's not the super flashy little border collie. They do take time. They do take more patience. So I would just be really keeping it simple, like getting him out into a bigger area that gives you some space with not a lot of distractions, get high reward food like chicken or steak or whatever tickles your fancy okay. there on the food or what he gets excited about. And then I would start working on developing those basics. I would really start working on those things because the reality is that's exactly the way I'm looking at this. It's like, hey, I have this advanced problem. I can't figure things out. And then I'm like, all right, let's see. Okay, that's your advanced problem. Let's see your basic skills. And it's like, they're just non-existent. Yeah. And I have fundamentally done so many things with dogs and so many seminars just working on rebuilding foundation. And all of a sudden, after 24 hours, 48 hours, poof, the behavior is gone. Because the lack thereof communication and foundation is what caused this anxiousness, this reactivity, this aggression. Once you start building a better, healthier relationship with your dog, poof, these things go away. Because oftentimes, especially for reactivity, it's not real. They just don't know what else to do. And the moment you hold them their hand and give them an opportunity to do something alternatively, they're going to choose to do that all day long because they're like, thank God, I didn't want to go there anyway. I didn't want to do that. So I want to be transparent and real with you that I wish I, like, there's a part of me that feels bad I don't get into this, like, really in-depth training program with you. But to be completely honest with you, that would be a waste of your time and my time because if I started going down this behavioral rabbit hole and this, like, again, very in-depth roadmap to training, it would probably be a waste of time only because... Again, it's like, hey, my dog is going after the other dog. It's over space. He's insecure. He's nervy. I'm like, okay, let's get him out and do basics. And it's just, you can't. Like, you can't do the basics. And I totally understand what you're saying about, and I'm mindful of, under certain circumstances, he can do it sometimes, but that's not any good to us. Like, if, you know what I mean? Like, if I can only drive the car.
He was great at it when he was a puppy. He did everything really well. We were still using treats then. And then when we started using my trainer and like the choke collar, just to give like a light correction, like a light tap mm-hmm. with the choker collar, mm-hmm. he fell apart. And then like, it's been like since then.
Yeah. So I would and that can happen with very two things that happens for is like very, I would say sensitive dogs and also dogs who don't understand the game. I've seen that happen so many times where let's say we say Bogart down, and they're not really 100. So if you focus too much on, let's say, positive reinforcement.
He knows the command.
Right. Okay. Well, then if he knows the
command. Know
if he knows the command, sometimes dogs in the preliminary stages have gotten away with not doing the behavior on their terms for so long that once you start giving them pressure for not doing it, they unravel. They completely unravel. Meaning, if we say down 4 times when it should be once or 5 times, or we're heavily luring with food, and then that's their concept of a behavior, and then we switch and we go, okay, hey, Bogart down. And they're like, well, you got to do the food and the lure, and you got to ask me about 4 more times. Right. Then he's like, that's down to them. But then when you start adding pressure after the first down, it's not their fault, because they're like, this isn't down to me. Down is food lure and 4 times for a down and begging, you know, or whatever. So anyway, it's who really knows? I mean, there's a lot that goes into dog behavior, obviously. But again, I want to be respectful and mindful and efficient with your time and mine, that I'm looking at this situation to say, again, hey, I have this very advanced type of thing going on. It's really not that hard to conceptualize, to be honest. You have an insecure dog with not a lot of structure, not a lot of good foundation, and he's making bad decisions. And I would just get back down to the basics and start holding him accountable. And also, when he's in situations that he could potentially trigger, I would make sure that he's on leash so you can catch him at this moment to really teach him that that is something you don't want to see anymore.
Okay. Do we get like the prong collar involved in those situations at all, or?
Here's what it depends on. It depends on if you can give him a verbal quit the shit and then a correction from the martingale or a slip or whatever, then no, you don't need the prong. There's a ladder of prong, right? And the ladder is dependent on a lot of things. It depends on the owner's capabilities. It depends on the size and power of the dog. It depends on how sensitive the dog is. And it really depends on how well the dog is understanding of what you're enforcing, right? Like, if you didn't know laws and you broke the law, you'd be traumatized. Like, why'd I get a ticket? Right. I didn't know that was the speed limit. So you would go down that road yourself. So think about when you're when you're correcting him, is it fair? Does he make sense of it? Is he respectful of it?
He always looks a little guilty after getting corrected, or after he does like go and, you know, beat up his brother, he does tend to look guilty afterwards, like still look sorry. And then, you know, if they put him out in the hallway and then I give him commands, at that point, he's listening perfectly first time. Boom, 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 which is why I say he knows them.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's break that apart a little bit. You should be like, let's say he's in a downstay, for an example. And then let's say Lincoln walks by. He lunges at Lincoln because he's like, don't walk in my space. Then you correct him for getting out of the downstay. That's where you need to really audit. Did that correction matter to him? If it didn't, then he's probably going to push past it. So I would just say, like, you can go down that ladder yourself. The prong collar is just another.
How do I correct him? What do you consider a correction?
Anything that helps clarify what the dog did wrong.
Okay.
So when a leash correction in the beginning is going to be paired with a verbal correction, right? So let's say let's make it easy. Let's do a down. We put a dog into a down. They know the down. You've created the down. No stress. You ask the dog to down. Whoosh, they go into a down. Perfect. You say stay. A chipmunk goes by. The dog gets out. We correct the dog with the leash. We say, it depends what you say, but you go no or ah-ah or down. And the correction is paired with the verbal corrective marker. For the next time when you say no, down, leave it, that the dog responds to just your verbal and not the leash. Like, if you depend on your leash, just like if you depend on food, the dog really... Yeah, or the yeah, that's what I mean is like, so if it's a question of what type of correction, because that's where things get dicey, especially in the dog training game, because people are, there's no definition of these terms, right? So the correction could be literally looking at the dog, correcting the dog with a leash, correcting the dog with a collar, correcting the dog with a harness. But at the end of the day, when people say, hey, I'm correcting my dog and the dog doesn't respond, that's a problem. That means that the enforcement that you're providing, the accountability that you're providing for the dog, for the behavior that causes all this stress and unwanted stuff in your life is not enough. It doesn't matter. And that's what we see often. So a correction just clarifies things for the dog. It holds them accountable.
So right now, his collar is on the, like his leash is on his fat, flat collar. Mm-hmm. So it would be just like making a simple tug on the leash as I'm saying no.
It would be pop. Yeah. You want to, yeah, you want to do, yeah, you want to do it fast. You don't want to pull. You're not trying to pull the dog. You're trying to just pop.
No.
Yep. But again, that, like a flat collar correction, like I just did a seminar in Portugal a couple weeks ago and somebody said, why don't you use the martingale? And it was such a good question. They were like, why don't you use, it was a French bulldog that was trying to bite my leg off. They said, why don't you use the martingale? And I said, because I've used the martingale 150 times with the same exact dog and it's never provided results. So I'm an evidence-based dog trainer resulting on actual factual dogs in the field, not like what we're reading online of what people's opinions are, right? So
yeah.
I think it's important for you as you're going through this process, equipment is leashes, treats, collars, toys, that's all equipment to dog training. And if something isn't providing you value and clarity in that training process, then you should not use it. And that's like been my huge motto and success in dog training. So, so anyway, so I hope that answers your question on correction, but I think it's like, if you just use your flat collar and like you get a 100-pound plus dog and you say, nope, and you correct with the flat collar, there's a good chance that they're not even going to acknowledge that you even corrected them because it's not enough, right? So that's where the ladder comes in, where you're like, okay, this dog under these circumstances needs something to really get in there to clarify things. And the flat collar is not working, or the harness isn't working, or the choke collar is choking the dog out. Like that's where you switch really quickly. Like I move up and down that ladder within 5 minutes with a dog just to see what gets in there, because you just got to be efficient, right? You get in there really quickly to communicate, and that's once you get that like clear understanding, right? Like, okay, I'm speaking your language now. Now we can grow. I don't like spending 3 months trying to figure out what the dog responds to when it's a completely easy dog to train. It's not like a neurological mess that's been shot in the face by three people. It's like, let's make this easy and streamlined. So.
Anyway. I mean, as long as he's not like too far, like he's not lunging for the dog, he just is like tensing. And if I do a sharp no, you know, and leave it, like he will like
that's a good correction.
Shake out of it. So
that's a good question. That's a good question. So very good question. You have to be careful once a dog. So our objective, let's say under this context of Bogart staying in a down, although he gets nervous about, this is the difference between obedience and behavior modification and counter conditioning. Like we have to be careful about what we're correcting, because let's say Bogart's in a down stay, Lincoln passes, Bogart sits there and you could tell he's building and he's nervous, but he doesn't physically move exactly, and then we correct him anyway. You have to be very careful about that, because you know anytime that I train, I'm really focused on clarity. I just want the dog to fundamentally understand, hey man, great job, and then hey man, bad job. And if the objective if your objective is for your dog to like make better decisions, and then we finally do, but we correct the dog for very minor things.
Minor stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I get you. I get you. That makes sense. My other trainer was teaching the take it, leave it, and then we would throw treats on the floor and have the dog walk past them so they would understand you could be around it, you just can't put it in your mouth. So, and then they were fine and were, you know, praised and rewarded for walking past it. But as soon as they went for it, then it was a correction and a no.
Yeah.
So they kind of related the two. It was more the action you don't want them to do. I get you.
Yeah. And it's very discretionary on the situation. Like sometimes a dog will consistently do one thing and then do the thing we don't want, which means the dog may growl, then lunge, growl, then lunge, growl, then lunge. Then we make a really easy game plan to say, okay, we're correcting on the growl because we know the next thing is going to be the lunge, right? Super easy. But if a dog is like whale eyeing and getting nervous, but not physically going after the dog because they're being obedient to you and they're trying to make a better decision, that's where you ultimately pay the dog. And that's really important because some people, especially in the dog training space, will consistently try to change something that's never going to change, right? Like, I want this dog to never be aggressive or never chase kids or never chase cats or never chase chickens. I'm like, that's what they're bred to do. It's what they're born to do. It's not going to happen. So anyway, you work on these things to say, hey, I know what you wanted to do, but you made a really good decision. Here's your payment for that. Great job. Good thinking there. Right. That was stable. So
clarifying really fast. You said they growl and then lunge, but you would still only correct them if they lunged, not if they growled.
It depends.
Like, you know it's coming, but
yeah.
So you know it's in sync, so it doesn't matter at that point, or
yeah, good question. It depends on the my clarification for that is in the beginning stages of this process, the dog communicating that they're uncomfortable but not acting, you'd be neutral. You wouldn't necessarily pay because we're not paying for growling, but we obviously wouldn't correct either. But my system has been very successful where if a certain behavior then leads to the behavior we're trying to eliminate, a growl lunge, growl lunge, growl lunge, growl lunge, we know that the growl, 2 seconds later, the lunge is happening. So then I will correct the growl because I know that it's going to be paired with the lunge. So, but if a dog growls and then lets the dog pass, or I say let, it's probably a bad word, but if the dog growls and doesn't react physically, holds their own, then I'll pay and I'll say, hey, good decision. Because I'm not going to correct a dog for having clear signs of communication. Because sometimes, right, like my older dog, my shepherd, will do that to the puppy. She'll show her teeth and growl and make a very good decision to not, you know, correct him or put her teeth on him because he walked away or I intervened or whatever. I don't shun her for being clear. But what I do right, is if she does act on it, I'm like, hey, that's too much. And then I will correct her for that. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So working on basics. This is going to be a while.
Yeah. I mean, it is exactly. But again, I really want you to keep in consideration, like, I'm trying to work on this advanced complex thing, but you don't have the foundation. You know, it's like you're trying to build this house, but you literally don't have a foundation. Like, there's no cement in the ground. You're like, I don't understand why the framing just doesn't stay. It's like, because there's nothing to stay on.
Right. No, so, I get you. Okay. Yeah. So I'll start working on basics and see what I can do with that with him. They've always been the hardest to put in a down. Like, I've usually get them to sit and then they'll put themselves in a down because they're so big. They don't want to, you know,
that's fine.
Like, sit up. So,
that's fine.
Get them in a sit, that would be appropriate also.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or even like for me, the way that I teach my places or my touches is I don't care if you're doing handstands on the touch or the place or the, you know, the bed command, you just got to stay there.
Yeah.
But again, like if I say this all the time to my clients, if we put a dog into a sit and 10 times out of 10, they down, I'm like, stop with the sit, just do downs. Right. So same thing. Like if you just do place, and then your dog is going to down anyway, then like set yourself up for more success by putting the dog in a place. And if they decide to down on their own accord, great. But as long as they stay in position, that's really what you're after. You're after two things. Hey man, I want you to listen to me and make better decisions because you're being a jerk. Two is I don't want you to move off this because if you do, there's going to be a mistake, right? So you're doing two things. You're working on basic impulse control with obedience, but you're also making sure, like, again, two siblings that are fighting with each other in the house, brother and sister, brother and brother, whatever the heck it is, and the parents have zero say. Zero. Hey, kids, stop. And the kids are like this, flipping you off. Yeah. It's like, that's the problem, right? That's what you're dealing with is your dog is going after your other dog and you can't get your dog to down at all, right? So like how are you gonna combat that? So anyway.
Yeah. Makes sense. Okay. All right, so we work on this and then we would give you like we would schedule again when we get a little further.
Yeah, you could do that. You can schedule a little further. You can send me videos before.
Okay.
But yeah, you can. Yeah. That's what you. It's a big project, but it's an easy project. Honestly, like you just have to go back down to your foundation, and ultimately, I really truthfully think that you'll see a lot of results in the behavior.
I believe you.
Yeah. Once you start working on that. Cool.
I get it. It makes sense that he would. Listen to me, because I mean, I see him do it outside when he really wants to go, you know, back to the grass or something like that. But I'm telling him, nope, you got to come with me. And then I see him thinking about it, and then I give him a lot of praise when he, you know, chooses to come to me. So I, like, he's in there. It's just when he's inside, he's not thinking about it when he's around the other dog. So I got to get him, remind him, you still have to listen to me.
Yeah. Okay.
I get you.
All right. Well, good luck on everything. Right. Nice to
Thank
chat.
You.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you. It was nice to meet you.
You too. Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.